Good evening, everybody. Welcome. Got a good crew tonight. So my name's Laurie McKee. I chair the Consultative Committee. This is our final meeting for the year. We've got a full agenda. So just to get going, we do have one, maybe two people on the phone. Ingrid is... So Massimo is on the phone, and Massimo will introduce you in just a second. And then I think Savick is joining potentially by the conference call as well. We do have a number of new members here this evening, which is great. So we have Aileen Lucy. So Aileen is from Toronto Board of... Aileen.
Eileen.
Gaelic, right? Gaelic. From UPS and representing the Toronto Region Board of Trade. We have some new technical members. So Sarah Jarvis from Tourism Toronto is going to be here, so replacing Andrew Weir. Massimo Bergamini, president of NAC. And Massimo, you're on the phone. Thank you very much for joining. Maybe as we do the go around, we'll get folks to talk a little bit about themselves. We do have somebody new joining us from the city of Brampton. That's Daryl Van Morsel. Daryl, thank you. And is Caroline here? Yes. Hi, Caroline, from the Ministry of Tourism. Pograbia. There you go. So I think we'll just, those are just new members. I just want to do a quick go around. Did you want to do the roll call for everyone who's here? You don't have it? Okay, I'll do it. So I'm going to do it on the list on my page. So we have Sabir Syed from the region of Peel. Spadar here. Not here yet. He said Badar from the Brampton Board of Trade should be joining us. Councillor Gurpreet Dillon is not able to join us this evening. John Davidson from Halton Region. Hi, John. Heather Craig Petey is not able to join us tonight. Stephen Tufts, Brampton, Mississauga District Labour Council. Stephen left. Councillor Michael Ford from City of Toronto. Jan Nevins to my left, Mississauga Board of Trade. I've already mentioned Aileen Lucy. For Lena Bajoni today, we have Jonathan Weedle from the region of York. Councillor Crisanti, I think, maybe joining us still. No, you don't think so? Okay. From the region of Durham in place of Kathy Weiss, we have Kasia. No, I'm going to get it wrong. Bojecki? Councillor Parrish from Mississauga is not here. Shane Raymond, resident from City of Toronto. Hi, Shane. Stephen Rhodes is not able to join. Anton Norbert, also a resident of Brampton, is not able to join. Savick is to be joining us by phone. He's with Seneca College. And then, hello, Badar. Nice to see you.
Sorry,
that's all right. We just got going through the roll call. And then our technical members, Harold Drummond from the City of Mississauga, Ludwig D'Souza from Transport Canada. I've already introduced Daryl. Daryl's with the City of Brampton. Sarah from Tourism Toronto. Is Leslie here from NAV Canada? Nope. Leslie's a new member for us from NAV Canada. Hopefully she'll be able to join us. Paul Steckham, longtime member from MTO. There you are. And the others we've already introduced. So we have a full quorum and a full room, and we have our agenda that was circulated as well. So any concerns or issues with tonight's agenda? We have a couple of presentations on goods movement, and then we have an update on the workforce activities that the GTA has been looking into. I have a motion to approve tonight's agenda. Badar, second. Any opposed? All right, that's carried. We also have the minutes from our last meeting, which were from October the 4th. So there is one error, just a typographical error that's been corrected since it was sent to you. And also, when we did our member update, Stephen Tufts had requested that his comments be included in our printed minutes. And so that has been included. He did indicate during his comments that there was licensing of temporary agencies by the GTA to perform functions at the airport that's subject to a labor dispute. and is an example of employer collusion to break the strike. So Stephen had asked that we include those in the document admittance. So those, that has been included. So if I could have a motion to approve minutes as amended. Jan, seconder Bedar, any opposed? Those are carried as amended.
Well, Savick here.
Hi, Savick. How are you?
Sorry. I'm good, thanks.
Good. We just have approved the agenda and the minutes from our last meeting, and we're just about to go to the regular items update. So our regular update was circulated with the agenda. You can see the routine reports we provide in terms of the growth from Q3. We did have a change at our senior management table in that Ian Clark, who had been in an acting role as our CFO, he was made permanent. I also wanted to draw your attention to community impacts chart. We provide this to you at all of our meetings. We want to make sure there's a good link between our Community Environment Noise Advisory Committee and the work that this group does. And so that's included as well. Any questions on the update? I think it's fairly standard information that we share with you. Before I go into presentations, and we do have a roundtable at the end, so anything before we move into our presentations? I think I did say, and I didn't do it, so one thing would be great to do is maybe just our new members, because some of our new members are actually brand new. So Massimo, who is on the phone, represents NAC, so representative of airlines. One of the things we talked about when we did our review of the committee is the fact that we felt we needed to have somebody from the airline sector on the committee. So Massimo, do you want to just take a couple seconds to introduce yourself and the work that NAC does?
Certainly. Thank you very much. Very pleased to participate in this first meeting. I'm the relatively new president and CEO of National Airlines Council of Canada. It will be 1 year next week. I'm still very much in a learning phase. What I do know is that the year ahead and the next few years are full of opportunity for our sector, and I'm looking at this not only in terms of the global growth of passenger aviation, but just in terms of opportunities and in terms of the public agenda in Canada. We have seen a level of interest that is fairly new on the part of the Government of Canada. There are a number of challenges, obviously, with respect to some policy agendas that we have to be mindful of. But often in public policy challenges, there are also avenues for growth. So we're quite excited in terms of the next few months, and I certainly look forward to contributing however I can to your work, and at the same time also feeding back into my organization any insights that might be helpful. And certainly we're prepared to be strong partners to the GTAA.
Thanks, Massimo. Also, we had Ryan Faulkner, who was representing the Toronto Region Board of Trade, and Ryan has moved back to Australia, New Zealand. And so we're really pleased to have Aileen here with us today. Maybe you can just tell us a little bit about yourself and the role that you play outside of the Board of Trade.
Thank you. So you've lost someone to Australia, but you've gained somebody from Europe. I moved over here to Canada with UPS. So I work for UPS Canada from our European headquarters at the end of last year. I'm our Vice President for Public Affairs. So I manage government relations, government affairs, and all things public policy for UPS at the federal, provincial, and municipal levels. Very honoured to have the opportunity to be part of this group, thanks to the Toronto Board of Trade. So I'm active within the Toronto Board on their Infrastructure and Transportation Committee and their efforts related to the movement of goods, of course. So coming to this group, I certainly hope to be able to contribute. We certainly look at Pearson Airport, I would say probably from two aspects, one more local and regional issues, there are there for Pearson Airport, but also very much an international perspective. It's what we see as an international gateway, and UPS is, after all about international trade. So very much looking forward to getting to know everyone and contributing to this group.
And our other new member, Sarah, I know you tried to get here at our last meeting and were stymied. So maybe to introduce yourself and what you do with Tourism Toronto.
Sure, of course. So Sarah Jarvis, I'm with Tourism Toronto. I'm the Director of Partnerships with the organization. I've been there now since March. My background is I've worked basically with, I think, every arts organization in the City of Toronto in sponsorship and events. So I was brought on board with TT to develop a new partnership program and evolve our membership and work with stakeholders, the city, and potential sponsors from Corporate Canada.
Thank you very much. Welcome. All right. So that moves us into our first agenda item, which is a presentation that will be delivered by Natasha from Toronto Region Board of Trade. I don't look at my face. So we do have two items today that are very nicely connected. Goods movement is obviously a big piece of trade and moving the economy. Airports play a significant role. One of the things we've been very much focused on, as we've talked about here, is transit and more effectively moving, getting people out of their cars and moving them on the roads. Well, one of the other good things that that does, it helps to free up the roads a little bit for cargo to move. We don't have a lot of all cargo aircraft that operate at Pearson. Most of our cargo comes in the underbelly of passenger aircraft. But that, given the number of passenger aircraft we have, is a pretty big number, half of Canada's cargo. So goods movement and being a part of solutions around goods movement strategies to help move the economy and play the role that we need to play is something that's very important to us as well. So really happy to have Natasha here. And then Natasha will be followed by a presentation on the strategic direction that Peel has been taking on the goods movement front. So I'll introduce that presentation when Natasha's finished. Over to you.
Thank you so much, Rory. Everyone can hear me at the back? It's okay? Thanks so much. This is a great opportunity, and I really feel like I'm among the circle of friends. So I certainly see Eileen Lucy is here, and she has been very much involved with our initiative, and also Sabir Syed and Ludovic from Transport Canada. So this is fantastic, as well as GTA, of course. So we're very, very pleased that this initiative has been finally off the ground. About a year ago, we were pondering about whether or not we should engage in something like that, given our work on transportation. We have historically been very much focused on moving people across the Greater Toronto and Hamilton area. So pretty much on more of a passenger side. However, we always felt that to really fully complete the equation of transportation goods movement has to be part of the equation, and that's why we really included that focus. This study, which we hope will be a multi-year initiative with our partners, with our members at the Toronto Region Board of Trade, really focuses on all five modes of transportation. Exciting. It also includes the entire corridor, the Toronto-Waterloo corridor, and that corridor, for those of you who maybe not as familiar with it, it's basically five census metropolitan area. So it includes Oshawa, Toronto, Hamilton, Guelph, Kitchener, Cambridge, and Waterloo. And so we thought that this lens would be very consistent with all of the other work that we're currently leading. Some of you may be aware that we're also coordinating a supercluster, advanced manufacturing supercluster bid, on behalf of the Toronto Region Board of Trade and definitely businesses and other chambers of commerce across the corridor. We're very much engaged with McKinsey, with John Kelleher on that sort of a, you know, in that direction. And we thought that it would only be complete if we focus on transportation from that lens. So what we found is that, and probably it's not going to be a big surprise, the number is a bit bigger than what the region of Peel found in terms of the activity that is happening within the corridor. We see that there is 1 million of tons that gets moved through the region daily, and that translates basically into $3 billion of goods on a daily basis, and that's only using our roads, essentially only our trucks. And I should also note that the study has been, you know, generously supported by a number of different stakeholders, including UPS, including Region of Peel. We have been working very closely with our research partner, CPCS, on that study. And I think one of the key challenges that we came across is really the ability of having the data that really supports all modes of transportation. So I don't need to tell you about the fact that our region, the corridor, is really Canada's largest multimodal goods transportation hub. I think we all experience it on a daily basis. In fact, my personal story is that I do commute quite a bit with my kids across the Toronto region, often from one municipality to another. I live very close to the Ontario Food Terminal, so I also very much experience congestion on a daily basis. So for me personally, I think this is a very interesting topic and also the one that really can improve the lives of people of the region, but also really translate into much, much higher impact in terms of our contribution to trade. Some of you may know the statistic that that we often cite about the trade is that it's about 5 to 7% of our small and medium enterprises that are trading. One of the key mandates for the Toronto Region Board of Trade is trade. How do we enable more trade? And certainly one of the ways to do that is by looking at a better opportunity around goods movement. So the very first report was very focused on economic impact of this sector, and so we really just followed a traditional economic impact assessment. I did bring the copies of the first report. The second and third report, the reports are being published as we speak, so I will be able to share with you as soon as I have it. And so what we found essentially is that, and probably shouldn't surprise anyone, we have about 34% of regions or corridors GDP attributed to key economic sectors such as manufacturing, wholesale and retail, construction, transportation, warehousing, and primary industries. And one that really particularly stood out for me was really the manufacturing sector. Why? Well, because it actually accounts for about 13% of corridors GDP. It employs close to 400 people in the corridor. It really provides with a very high and stable source of income of about $41 billion, and it really makes accounts for very high quality jobs as well, which are kind of on the edge of high-tech, sophisticated manufacturing, which we do have in the corridor. So challenges as we uncovered them, I don't think, again, it would surprise anyone, of course, partly because we do have a lot of really good data that supports it. So we see road congestion being one of these key challenges, land use conflicts, and that was a reason why I mentioned Ontario Food Terminal, because, you know, often people think, well, why is it really located close to the city? Why is it in the city? Why can't it be outside? Why can't it be so far away? And the reason being because that the Ontario Food Terminal actually really, really does support a very vibrant food and beverage sector that employs a substantial amount of people, that accounts for exports. And in fact, if you look on a North American basis, that sector really is one of the fastest growing sectors in North America. And also we are, I think, second to Los Angeles in terms of the economic impact. Last mile, and I should say, first mile connectivity is very important, and that certainly is the key area of focus right now on the passenger side as well. need for strategic vision. We often see within the corridors that we certainly see the study and initiative read by Region of Peel. We think that this is certainly fantastic, but it needs to be more regional in nature, and that's why we really supported this initiative. And of course, application of technology is really critical. That could really alleviate a lot of congestion and could improve communicability among cars. So what you see here is essentially what we experience every day, congestion on our roads, shouldn't surprise anyone. And in particular, if I go into, I guess, specificity around the data that we were able to generate, we see that one of the most congested areas is really the area around the airport. And so one of the ways, I guess, to really kind of feel that pain is by suggesting that trucks that move in and out around of the airport, they can only develop speeds close to 40 kilometers an hour, which is a huge difference from the speed limits of 100 kilometers an hour. And this is really during the peak hour traffic. Other highways, of course, 400 series, as you see, 404 at 401 interchange, 427 Queen Elizabeth Way, Highway 410, Highway 400. So major capacity issue as we see it, poor management of our road system, and certainly opportunity for improvement based on the data that we have. And with the report that we published in conjunction with the Transportation Summit that we hosted last week certainly has all of that information. So I'm more than happy to share the report electronically and also hard copy of that as well. If you look at air, I guess it shouldn't surprise anyone that Toronto Pearson is the largest in the corridor. It accounts for 43% of national air cargo that is destined or originated for the corridor. And here the main challenge is not so much capacity of the airport itself, because it can certainly adjust and can grow as demand and meet the demand. But the challenge is really the ability to hand off goods to the highway system, or to rely on that sort of the last mile from the airport to the road, and then let's say to the intermodal facility of CN or CP for that matter. So really clogged roads, as suggested by the president of the GTA, challenge, and the speed by which some of the goods that are moving, and specifically in high value added sectors, very costly, obviously. So that is a challenge for the corridor. Quick overview of marine infrastructure. So we see that certainly a lot of goods get moved through three key airports, Port of Hamilton, Port of Toronto, Port of Oshawa. You know, the goods that I can particularly relate to is really sugar, because that's what you see with respect to the Red Path sugar, for example, and that gets moved in and out of the Port of Toronto. That's one of the key commodities. Interestingly, steel, of course, that's Hamilton port. Salt, stone, asphalt, aggregates, so really construction-related materials get really moved through these ports. And our research, unfortunately, there isn't really that much data there, but there's a lot of anecdotes that we were able to pull, and a lot of stories from our key stakeholders. One of the key things is that the capacity is not really an issue right now, because in some ways, we're not really using ports to the same ability that we could be. In fact, we're at 50% of our capacity, because we could take advantage of that. However, the challenge is that the ports are really running into conflict with very rapid urbanization, and land for development is often being utilized for the high impact in terms of the taxation revenue on the residential front. And we see that with many, many different examples of sort of encroaching and fighting, and how do you make sure that you really do protect key infrastructure elements that you have in your corridor, in fact, you know, create some sort of guidelines around not being able to see them go. For rail, it was very interesting to see, of course, CNCP being the really the key movers of goods throughout the corridor and, of course, throughout the country. Interestingly, intermodal terminal in Brampton, run by CN, actually accounts for 40% of CN's intermodal traffic. And our data is also showing, and our a lot of stakeholder consultations do suggest that CN is running close to capacity, in fact, above capacity in their Brampton intermodal facility, and they're really looking to expand that. And so, therefore, you see the project, of course, in Milton that is under consideration, and hopefully that will alleviate some of the pressures that they're experiencing. One of the interesting points is that through our consultations, we heard them say that it is such a big problem that, in fact, in order to meet that very rapidly growing capacity that experienced about 50% growth over the past seven years, they do need to shift their containers, basically, onto trucks. And so what that means is that that creates even more problems for the highways that are already very congested. In terms of our solutions, this is something that we're still working on. This is our fourth report that will be released in early January. So there are essentially four buckets of solutions that we're exploring right now. I don't think they will surprise you. The first one is really the smarter use of existing infrastructure. The second bucket that we're looking at is targeted investment in new infrastructure. Third bucket is improved coordination of transportation and land use, and finally, addressing urban conflicts. I actually find this one very, very interesting, is that the fact that we actually don't have a lot of smart infrastructure that is being utilized on our highways right now. And one of these points is that, you know, for example, adaptive signal control. I didn't know until now that we've done this research, the fact that our traffic lights are not really coordinated. They're not responding to each other. So we can't really sort of have, you know, technology talk to each other. You know, the corridors, 401, for example, corridor doesn't really have that many smart features. And that's a problem because we see a lot of congestion, and particularly from Oshawa to Milton, that is really the piece that is being so congested. And of course, if you connect it back to the advanced manufacturing sector, and particularly GM, that is an issue because how would you ever actually move things on time and on budget from all the way from Oshawa to Milton or throughout the corridors is a challenge. So certainly that is something that can be improved. HOT, HOV lanes, we're suggesting that we really need to explore more opportunities around how could you increase road capacity, and how could you take off some of that gridlock. 401 express lanes is certainly something that could be utilized specifically to restricted to the trucks and to the cars that move products. One of the ideas is also to take better advantage of the existing 407 infrastructure, and is there a way for trucks to move 407? What kind of a mechanism is required in terms of tax credits and rebates? And what can we do to really ensure that some of the trucks really essentially start using 407 much more efficiently than they do right now? Because cost is obviously a big issue. One in particular here that really, really resonated with me as we were working through the potential areas of solutions is the one that's related to smart cities, and specifically around what was done by the city that won the smart city challenge in the U.S. That was Columbus, Ohio, and how they were able to really develop a very comprehensive smart strategy that incorporates self-driving cars, smart grids, smart street lights, and smart transit corridors. So that certainly can be done. It's being done in the U.S. You know, we are very excited about a very, very similar opportunity that is launched in Canada, that was launched, in fact, last week around smart cities. Is that something that can be explored, and how can we coordinate among municipalities? I think that would be a very interesting opportunity. And, of course, other things like truck platooning. I don't fully understand what that is, but I do know that it holds a lot of potential. Autonomous vehicles, and certainly, you know, certain, you know, technologies that are being developed as we speak. At Mars, Hyperloop, for example, is very much at the process of selecting a testing site for what they're doing. So could that help? I think it could. How quickly? I don't know. I think it's probably more of a medium term solution. New infrastructure, very much similar to the point that we were making with respect to passenger side of things. Business case analysis, having a very, very strong understanding of what the impact is of each of the projects that is being advanced is really important. So we're looking for a very strong business case, like the case with Regional Express Rail, or, for example, if you move to the goods movement side of the equation, see an intermodal terminal in those. And we're looking to support investments that really do subscribe to a very strong business case. Leveraging the available federal funding for goods movement projects. At the Transportation Summit, we heard that certainly the fund that was announced in the previous federal budget was very much welcome. It's about $2 billion over the next 11 years. Is that enough? Probably not, but it's certainly a step in the right direction. And it would be very good to make sure that projects could be coordinated and according to the business case, that we can really take advantage of federal funding, but there's also opportunities at the provincial level as well. Transportation land use coordination, I think that is a very interesting area for exploration. Maybe one that I'll pick in particular is the multimodal strategic goods movement network. That is essentially the work that the Region of Peel has conducted. We very much welcome this sort of work across the corridor. And interestingly, and this is something I learned at the Region of Peel Summit that was hosted, I believe, last month, a study led by Pembina Institute found that only one out of 23 Ontario municipalities currently has a standalone goods movement plan. That one, you can probably guess who that is. And some municipalities in the corridor have developed goods movement networks, but they don't necessarily have a very clear understanding of how those networks interact with goods movement plans. So that is, I think that's a concern. I think it needs to be done on a much, much larger scale and across key municipalities. We see that the City of Toronto is very much interested in that. So this is definitely a welcome sign. And we hope to see that. Solving the last mile for goods movement, that is certainly a key consideration. We're looking to explore that a lot more. We understand that there are different concepts that are certainly being tested and quite successfully in Europe. And certainly, Eileen, I'm sure, is in a much better position to talk about how that actually works in Europe and how could that work in the corridor. Dedicated delivery areas, again, you know, and this is something that I personally leave every day when I go into the building downtown of Toronto at King and Bay. You know, you see trucks in and out of the corridor, yet we don't fully recognize the importance of these trucks and how much they actually bring into these buildings downtown of Toronto, and how can you make sure that they don't have to idle, they don't have to circle around buildings, they don't have to wait. They don't have to be ticketed because that's an issue. And, you know, how is it that you can install a bike lane on such a busy road that's really beyond my understanding. What is the role? This is, I guess, the other key area for us as well is exploring off-peak delivery strategy across the region. I know that this is being it's being piloted right now by the Region of Peel, but can we do that across the region? That is a really interesting area for us. Again, solutions to last mile issues, and I think, you know, use of drones, I think that certainly is very intriguing. I don't know if we can, how quickly we can implement it, but I certainly am very intrigued by that, but by that idea. And of course, dedicated delivery areas and design solutions for truck unloading and making sure that trucks are not really ticketed for the fact that they have to unload goods that they're delivering to businesses and residents in the corridor. One idea that we are also very keen about is the fact that we could potentially play a big role in that, for that particular sector, goods movement sector. And that would be really, in our, I think it would align with our experiences of supporting similar initiatives for other sectors, for example, human health sciences cluster, food and beverage sector, and advanced manufacturing supercluster bid that we're currently leading. We have been shortlisted. So we certainly see that something similar to what we've done in the past can be done for this particular sector that is very key to our economy, and we will look into to create something similar to what was done in the Greater Montreal area. It's called Cargo M. So that's certainly something that we are exploring right now. This is a quick summary. As I said, I'm very happy to share with you the reports. Electronically and also print versions. And in terms of the next opportunity for us is that we're looking to launch the report that really helps with potential policies and solutions to goods movement bottlenecks and challenges. That will be in January of 2018. And I think the other opportunity for us is really to do more of a deep dive analysis in terms of, let's say, off-peak delivery on a regional basis. What can we do? Who do we need to bring into the room? And how can we really help municipalities to understand the benefit of that? Maybe there is something around downtown delivery. How can we facilitate that? Toronto, Hamilton, let's say Kitchener-Waterloo, because that's the corridor approach that we're taking. There are specific areas of focus that we're very interested in around, you know, leveraging e-commerce and understanding what the impact of e-commerce is on goods movement. And there are other, I think the list goes on. I think we're certainly looking for opportunity to continue to be a very engaging organization that can help solve issues on a regional basis, but also across different modes of transport.
Wow, you've been busy.
Busy, yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot there. I have a couple of questions and comments that maybe I'll first put out to the committee.
Yeah, thank you very much. You did cover a lot of ground. I'm glad I have something written here. Sorry. Yeah. It's sort of a two-part question. One is, what are the cost and benefits of doing these kinds of reports and studies where you separate out cargo from the movement of people? Okay, because you're talking about goods movement, but inevitably it comes into conflict with the movement of people, and they're linked, right, with the public transit system. And secondly is, just in the last few days, Toronto Board of Trade has also dropped Superlinks on us, all right, which is, you know, had some reaction. And I'm wondering how Superlinks fits into and dovetails with your cargo strategy and what you're proposing. Because I see some links between the two, no pun intended. But I also see in your recommendations, a very corporatist agenda for transportation planning in the province, which removes politicians from the process, replacing it with authorities that are based on business community with some having expertise in transit planning. So I'm just wondering if you can speak a little bit to those questions.
Oh, the two are connected.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a very, very good question. Certainly from the boards of trade perspective, the side that you spoke to about the Superlinks and the transit and the passenger side of things, very important to our competitiveness as a region. Certainly that came in spades in the Amazon bid, that this is a key challenge for us. We're not connecting the region as well as we could. And certainly if we are aspiring to be that global leader as a city region, we really need to do better on transportation. We really need to do better on housing. And so we believe that the Superlinks proposal could really help to, A, build things faster, really make sure that there is a very strong business case that is behind, that is supportive, really remove the politicization, sorry, I can't pronounce that, of essentially the, you know, I'm sure there are examples that you know of in terms of where the politics really interferes so much in terms of planning and getting things done quickly. So I think that's certainly one side of it. I think the other side, which is very much connected to that, you know, if we can provide passengers with really great options in terms of available public transit that is well coordinated, that provides them with a single, you know, sort of a fare system. Unfortunately, I think we're making a lot of really good progress. However, from a user perspective, someone who is trying to go from Hamilton, trying to go to Toronto, or, you know, reverse commute, it's still not there. So there are some concerns, and we think that by doing what we are sort of suggesting right now, and it's up for debate, it's really the Board of Trade there is trying to spark the debate, make sure that it certainly is something that is of interest in the context of political, in the context of the provincial elections in June. So we want to make sure that if that's not the proposal that people prefer, that's fine, but we're looking for that debate. We're really wanting to make sure that we continue to make progress on transportation. And in fact, one of the key anecdotes, key stories that I wanted to mention is that when Carol Wilding, our previous CEO, she left the Board of Trade back in 2014. There was a speech that was written for her by our Public Affairs Department. And in that speech, it said that, I hope that 4 years from now, you know, the person who will be in my position will not be saying the same things that I said back in 2014. Unfortunately, I think we still find ourselves in a situation where things are not moving as quickly as they should. For the region that is the size of Toronto and growing so rapidly, with 1.2 million estimated to move into the region every year. So that makes it 1.2 billion over the next decade. And how are we accommodating that growth? I think that's a key question. So that's on the Superlinks. On the goods movement, I probably want to say that this is still very much early in the process. We haven't really spent nearly as much time on goods movement as we have spent on the passenger side of things. So we are looking to connect the two. I think this, the focus on goods movement is really with respect to enabling trade out of the region, and that's probably one of the key impetuses behind it. And also being inspired by other international regions. Texas comes to mind, or Greater Seattle area, where there are very, very strong, robust plans. Oh. Thought that is being given to the goods movement. And certainly locally inspired by a region of feel, the work that they've done, and really wanting to do more of that on a regional basis.
Problem. So, from the standpoint of the opportunity cost to our region collectively, including Brampton, and I'm sure our colleagues in Mississauga would agree, I think all of these measures and suggestions have a lot of relevance. And I would go as far as saying that it's not just actually developed markets. It's not just our cousins down south that are working on this, whether you look at Istanbul or whether you look at New Delhi. All the major urban hubs, even developing markets, are already thinking along the same line. So there's a risk if, from a business standpoint, if we don't move in these directions, then not only will we be left behind here in developed markets, but we'll also be left behind in terms of our competitiveness as it relates to developing markets. My question to you is, Toronto Board of Trade also recently floated the idea that the municipalities should upload the transit side of the equation to province. So from your perspective, do you see that as the first step for us to be implement some of the solutions that you're suggesting?
On the goods movement side? I don't think so. I don't think these are necessarily interrelated. And maybe this is because it's too early in the process on the goods movement side. I think I'm not quite, I think these are happening on two separate tracks, right? One is specifically from the point of view of talent attraction and retention, knowing that, you know, the passenger side of things is a big challenge for our competitiveness. So that needs to move ahead. This sort of a bucket is more of from the point of view of growing trade and really creating many companies that could trade globally, and how can they do that? Well, by really effectively relying on all modes of transportation. And I should also mention that extremely thankful for your support, the Brampton Board of Trade, and the Mississauga Board of Trade, and in fact, many boards of trade that are involved in the corridor. We have been working very collaboratively, and we really appreciate all of the effort and consideration you've given to this
initiative. Jan, and then Councillor Ford.
Reiterate too, is looking at the Vancouver experience, shipping a lot of it. So I know that Hamilton, they ship a week to Italy, and then we buy this high-end pasta from Italy as Canadians. That's very good. So that's working well, which most people don't. Traffic compared to 15, 20 years is more than 10 times the amount. And when I drive down there, and then on weekdays, because we have the office down there, I find that it doesn't matter what time of day it is, I find that trucks used to be just on far right-hand lane. Oh, no, they're on all three lanes. And they're not just for 2 minutes passing a truck. They're going like 20. Great that they're widening the 401, but some days you wonder, are they trying to knock us off? Like when we're driving down there to KW. Yeah. And so I know a lot of the people driving on that 401 notice this. So,
and maybe that's the result of some accidents too, like people versus
but maybe having an express
lane for the trucks, but I can understand them passing another truck.
Getting busy.
Yeah.
Councillor Ford.
Thank you. And thank you very much for such an informative presentation. So I have a few kind of questions here, and kind of relates to Stephen's questions. And as we are trying to move goods across the GTA and our cities growing at a rapid pace and how we are adapting to it. So you mentioned how the sector is adapting to the cities. What has been your experience with the municipalities, specifically Toronto, adapting to the industry? Have you seen
the goods movement industry?
Yes.
Well, I think
that's kind of a heavy question.
It's a heavy question. I think there's some room for growth. You know, I think there's some room for growth. I think there's certainly, you know, the fact that, you know, the head of the transportation department has been hired recently from a region that we aspire to be from the goods movement point of view, Barbara Gray, I think that is fantastic. I think she has a lot of really fantastic ideas in terms of what can be done. You know, the fact that you're doing the goods movement strategy for the City of Toronto, I think that's a very welcome sign. However, I think that, you know, from the urban design and you know, better livability of the city, I think that somehow it needs to really go hand in hand with the goods movement industry as well. Because at the end of the day, we do have a lot of businesses, a lot of consumers going into the city every day, you know, and how do they get all of these sort of goods? I think to some of them, I think it's a mystery. That was a mystery to me as well. Like, oh, well, you know, your coffee gets into the city by someone who's transporting it from another part of the region, for example, or Indigo. You know, Indigo, that was a very, very interesting, powerful story that Indigo actually has a very large distribution. I think it's the only distribution center that they have in Canada, which is located in Brampton. And so all of that then has to be transported across the region and into the city of Toronto from that particular location. So that's very interesting.
Right. I'm trying to keep my questions broad. So as I kind of go back to the gist of my First question. So as cities develop, especially in Toronto, I know Toronto specifically, we have been very keen through our economic development, and city planning to protect employment lands. But as residential zoning grows, do you see the industry growing out across the GTA and specifically international cargo coming in? Is there a growth at other airports when they're coming in, such as Hamilton, Waterloo, Oshawa?
Absolutely. That is a huge, I think it's a huge factor. It's a huge consideration. There are a lot of businesses that are locating close to airports, to the ports, and that is fantastic. What we need to make sure is that they continue to be locating there. That makes a lot of sense from the logistical standpoint, makes a lot of sense from the economic standpoint. So it needs to be happening that way. Absolutely. I think it's absolutely right.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for the presentation. I'm curious as to, I guess, what sort of inroads the Board of Trade has made consulting with the railways in terms of unlocking the potential for new dedicated freight lines that will, I guess, back maybe to Stephen's point about goods movement versus people movement, which will allow dedicated freight corridors. We know that the CP line goes through Midtown Toronto. It's, you know, there's safety concerns with that, etc. But I know there's a lot of moving parts with that, but I'm just curious as to where the board, how far the board has gone with that, because it's certainly a question for a lot of the 905 as well as the 416 municipalities. So it is a corridor question, and I'm just curious as to what the early findings are with those conversations.
I think we're doing a lot of consultation. Sometimes, you know, this, and I'll be honest with you, this file is more aligning with what I'm doing at the Board of Trade, the movement of goods file, or goods movement. There is another person at the Board of Trade that is doing more on the passenger side of things. So I think we're certainly looking to coordinate a lot of our work. And I know the question that you're asking, that is related.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's part of it. Yeah, with Go Transit, but so it is certainly Metrolink's planning, but certainly there is. I think the railways are looking for, they're looking for the support as well. For them to go with a dedicated freight corridor is going to be at a huge capital expense. And you know, the concern is that these are the projects that will take decades to get done, and we can't wait that long. So just curious as to how the Toronto Region Board of Trade can try to push these conversations.
That's a very good consideration. Thank you very much for suggesting that, because I think that certainly is something that we could explore in a lot more detail in the next year. But I do think that from all of the consultations that we've done.
Any other questions from committee members? Any of our technical members have a question? I was surprised to see the manufacturing number so high. I mean, we keep hearing about manufacturing sort of disappearing, but to see it's 13% of GDP, clearly still a very big part. Maybe it's evolving into a different type of manufacturing.
And I think it's really the merger of the ICT with the manufacturing,
right,
that holds a lot of potential.
Good jobs. The missing link, I think, is in part what you're talking about, John.
Yeah, that's,
and
that's
again, that's,
yeah.
I mean, that's a very important project for many sort of Western GTA, but I think for the region writ large in terms of, and that's exactly where you get those conflicts between the passenger movement and the goods movement. One's slowing down the other. And so that is something that, does take time, does take lots of money, but it would be something that actually could unlock capacity for both to move more freely. The one question I had, I know, and I don't know who led this, I don't know if it was the City of Toronto or if it was the province, but during the Pan Am Games, I understand that there was some testing that was being done in terms of off-peak deliveries and some of the lane,
priority lanes,
So was there a sort of a roll-up report or findings from the Pan Am Games that isn't sort of instructive to us moving forward? I know that you've got some pilots you'll talk about in your work, but was there anything coming out of Pan Am?
Lori, I know that this was mentioned a number of times. In fact, at the Metrolinx symposium, that was mentioned by someone from the Ministry of Transportation. But I don't think I've seen any official reports of that. It was successful. They got about 500 different companies to participate in the off-peak delivery. Everyone enjoyed it. There was no problem. Everyone came together. They've done it. So can we do the same?
Well, was that an MTO project? No. Was there a final report?
I believe so. Have a whole office now dedicated to managing.
And then my final comment is just that conflict sometimes in terms of that protection of employment lands. That's critical around an airport, given the, you know, a lot of the business magnet or generation that happens in terms of location is. Want to make sure that you create and maintain space in all your municipalities for that employment land. The province just released yesterday part of its infrastructure plan, and I know that the final plan is to come out later in 2019. But again, it's, as I understand, it's going to be tying sort of employment nodes to infrastructure investments, and so there's lots of neat sort of parallels between the report you're doing that may align in terms of timing for the problems in terms of what they're thinking about for their infrastructure plan as well. All right. Thank you so much, Natasha. That was great. I think we're just going to flip over the deck. And Saeed, I think you're up next. So I think if you remember, this was on our agenda for our last meeting, but rather than being here talking to us, you were having more fun at the Ontario Municipal Board, which kept you very busy. So, Sabir, I will turn it over to you, and you've talked to us before, and there's also a copy of the strategic plan that Peel's put out. One of the things that we've known for some time is that the region of Peel really has taken a leadership role for quite a number of years now on the goods movement piece. We've participated with you for a number of years, and it sounds like there's been lots of engagement as well with other municipalities as well as boards of trade. So, looking forward to seeing the strategic plan.
Thank you, Larry. This is a good segue after Natasha's presentation on regional goods movement strategy. But before I get into my presentation, I can tell you that I have been working on a longer-term service plan, a long-term master plan, and we are planning for 2041. And as per the population and employment numbers that we have Council. Currently, the region of Peel's population is 1.4 million, will grow to 2 million people by year 2041. So we will be adding 600,000 people in the next 20, 25 years, so a city of size of Hamilton. So you can see there will be a significant growth in Peel. Also, we also have some numbers during peak period that there will be 300,000 trips more in peak period. So there will be 40% more trips in peak period. So you can see the traffic congestion is going to grow. So I've been very fortunate to work on the goods movement plan, but my group is responsible for system planning, so transportation system planning, program planning, as well as design and construction. So we are also responsible for building the arterial roads. We work very closely with MTO to build interchanges as well. So for example, right now, with MTO, we are partnering to build a full interchange on Courtney Parks. It's the city of Mississauga, region of Peel, and MTO is working together so that we can facilitate both people and goods movement. But just briefly, I'll talk to you about the goods movement in Peel, where we are coming from, what has changed since 2012 when we developed our first master plan, as well as where we are going with our next master plan. We were very fortunate to conduct a goods movement economic impact study at Peel, and we are one of those unique regions where we have developed an economic impact study from a goods movement perspective. And based on that study, we found that Peel Goods Movement contributes $49 billion to the economy. And it also is a part of, there are 4 out of 9 jobs in Peel are in Goods Movement industry. As well as we get 48% of total industrial and commercial property taxes from Goods Movement industry. So you can see Goods Movement is very important to Peel. And that's why we have invested significantly in Goods Movement. And I'm very fortunate that we have an excellent support from our regional council as well as from senior management as far as the Goods Movement is concerned. So the Goods Movement program always existed at Peel even before 2003, but we formalized our Goods Movement program in 2003. And we conducted a strategic Goods Movement study in 2004. And based on that study, we recommended that there will be a Goods Movement task force, which will be formed by a regional council. And this task force consists of both public sector partners as well as private sector partners. So all levels of government are represented. So MTO, Transport Canada, Metrolink, as well as our local municipalities. And from the private sector partners, we have GTAA, we have CNCP, trucking companies, Walmart, Canadian Tire, Nestle. So there are several businesses represented in our task force, as well as Board of Trades from Mississauga, Brampton, and Caledon. And we invite our adjoining municipalities from time to time to attend our meetings. With the help of Goods Movement Task Force, we have developed our first Goods Movement Strategic Plan, which had 23 action items. This was approved in 2012. And from 2012 to 2016, there were 23 action items, and we completed all 23 action items. We completed a Goods Movement Strategic Network in 2013, and I'll provide you more information on our information from the next strategic plan. So the strategic plan that we developed with the help of our task force from 2012 and 2016 had 23 action items. Some of those action items included the development of a strategic Goods Movement Network, the Peel Truckers Map. We also improved signal timing on our corridor. And on our task force, the task force is chaired by regional chair, but it's also, we also have a representation from City of Mississauga, Brampton, and Caledon. So Mayor McCallion, she used to sit on our task force. And at that time, it was made very clear to us by the businesses that we can sit at the table and we can talk about 2031 and 2041. But for us, the next quarter is more important. Profit is our bottom line. So if you are thinking of conducting a strategic study for 2031 or 41, we would like to see the immediate improvements to the network. So with their help, we worked very closely so that we can make significant improvements in next 1 or 2 years as well. So with the help of this task force, we developed a strategic plan where we were not only focusing on longer term action items, but also short and medium term action items were included. So we made significant improvements to our signal timing improvements. We also looked at incident management, our practices for construction management, et cetera. So we made significant progress where we were helping both people as well as the goods movement. We also did an extensive study on at-grade intersections. So we worked very closely with CN and CP, and we conducted a study and we mapped out which grade separations could be undertaken by Peel. We looked at the truck-only lanes, and as Jane, you were mentioning about the trucks traveling in all three lanes. That's a big issue at Peel as well. And actually, I have a council resolution for Dairy Road as well as the Highway 50, where our council has asked us to implement a pilot project to restrict or to do something about trucks traveling in a left lane. And I can tell you, just in last 6 months, we did some analysis. I had asked a couple of my staff as well as students to follow some trucks and see where are they going on our Dairy Road as well as on Highway 50. We found that 84% trucks, they come on left lane to turn at the next intersection. So we have been working with our transit agencies as well as police, both the regional Peel police as well as OPP, and we are trying to find out what should we do about this perception about truck traveling in all three lanes. So So we may be coming up with a pilot project where we may be posting a sign, say advisory signs, that the trucks travel on right lane or a middle lane. But those are some of the things that we will have to examine, because police, both Peel Police as well as OPP mentioned to us that it would be very difficult for us to enforce if you are going for a mandatory restrictions that the trucks should not travel on left lane. So there are significant consequences. Even our most of our corridors are also transit corridors as well. So our transit authorities, both Mississauga and Brampton Transit, mentioned to us that if you are allowing trucks to travel only on middle lane and right lane, it will significantly impact our transit services as well. We'll have to put more buses on roads. So you can see there's a chain reaction for both the people and goods movement. So since 2012 to 16 strategic plan that we developed, significant changes have occurred. And as you can see, the traffic congestion is growing. The customers' expectations are growing significantly. We are all ordering our packages through online businesses, and we are expecting the next day delivery. So you can see there is a significant customer expectations which are growing. There's an increasing concern of effect of traffic congestion, as well as the decreasing and availability of labor force as well. We have heard from the industry that there is a shortage of truck drivers. So we will be working with the industry in that regard as well. Then there is a concern about the environment, the emissions from the trucks, as well as from the transportation sector. Automation, technological changes are key. And you have heard about the Tesla car as well, Tesla trucks as well as the cars as well, and about the strategies to address population and employment growth pressures. So we conducted a significant consultations with our stakeholders, as well as with our residents, as well as the businesses. And right now there are 11 terms of council priority at Region of Peel, which the council have determined that they will be focusing on this term of council. Some of the important term of council priorities includes to reducing poverty or increasing stable employment or increasing affordable housing. So you can see the improving goods movement is one of the action that this term of council is focusing. So we conducted, as a part of our longer term goods movement study, we did extensive workshops, interviews with the businesses as well as with service, and we found out that the businesses are interested in off-peak delivery, e-commerce, as well as connected and autonomous vehicles and technologies. So with their help, we developed this strategic plan, which I've given you a copy. This plan will go from 2017 to 2021. This plan has been approved by our regional council, and there are 9 action items that we will be conducting over the next five-year period. So it includes the connected and autonomous vehicles. So we are interested in launching a pilot project for testing the autonomous commercial vehicle on the road. We are partnering with MTO, obviously, hopefully with Metrolinx and some private sector partners, so that we can test the commercial vehicle on our infrastructure. We have been working significantly on off-peak delivery. We have done extensive interviews with private sector industry partners, and there is a big interest in off-peak delivery. And as Lori, as you were mentioning, we are building upon the work that was done as a part of Pan Am Games. We also found that Vancouver had done similar work for the Olympics games as well. But those pilot projects were done for a particular period of time, like for a particular event. With this off-peak delivery program, we are trying to make a program that would go on for 2 years or maybe on an ongoing basis. We have been working with several industry partners, and they have mentioned, for example, Nestle has mentioned that we are not interested in a pilot project. We are interested in a permanent off-peak delivery pilot project. So there are ranges of industry partners' interest that they are interested in off-peak delivery. And this may be a really a good project for Metrolinx and MTO to partner with us as well, because there is only a limited capacity on our roads.
We have been working very closely with various partners on e-commerce strategy, where we can ensure that we are prepared with the increase in traffic because of our e-commerce strategy. We have been working very closely with MTO on long combination vehicles. Currently, MTO has increased the radius from 2 kilometers to 5 kilometers, and we want to make sure that these long combination vehicles, they can operate on regional roads and they can operate safely. So it could eliminate the truck trips as well. What we found that there are 43% truck trips which are empty. And at certain places, there are 29% empty truck trips on a GTHA wide. So if we can reduce those empty truck trips, there will be a significant decrease in truck traffic as well. Then there are other studies that we want to do as far as the education and outreach is concerned, as well as alternative fuels and a local freight fluidity. So these are some of our next steps. So we want to complete this 9 action items over a 5-year period. So we have already started working on off-peak delivery program, as well as the long combination vehicle pilot project. Next year, we'll be launching an e-commerce strategy study, as well as the fuel efficiency and freight education and outreach. We'll be also conducting an aggregate study for our Caledon and northern areas in Peel, because that's a significant area. We'll be working with various partners on autonomous and connected vehicles as well. Even though we have identified autonomous and connected vehicle pilot project maybe in 2021, but we have already started working right now so that we are prepared with the actual testing of the commercial vehicle on our roads. My last slide. So I'll be very pleased to answer your questions, but what I can say is that Goods Movement is a significant program at Peel, and we have an extensive support from our council as well as senior management, and we are very fortunate to work with many of you as a part of our task force, as well as partnerships and collaborations are key. So that's where we are focusing, that even though Peel may have a higher truck traffic in Peel, but the Goods Movement knows no boundaries. So it's important that we all work together.
Thanks, Sabir. Questions? I just want to know, if you only have 5 goals for the next, or 5 years, and you had 23 last time, so are you going to take some?
Yeah, I think this was very important. When we developed our first strategic plan, with the help of task force, they identified 23 action items. And when we were looking at spreading over those 23 action items over the next 5-year period, they asked us to do 12 action items in the very first year, because there was a lot of work that needed to be done. But what we have found now that since we have done a significant work since 2012, we are quite ahead of many other regions as far as the Goods Movement is concerned. So that's why we have now only 9 action items. And we wanted to make sure that what we promise, we are also able to deliver. So that's why we are working on 9 action items.
Well, I think looking at your work plan, those are some of the things that we were sort of asking about when we were talking to Natasha. So it's interesting to see those things coming up that you're digging into. 5 years, so that's terrific.
And I can mention that there are 3 facilities, including GTAA, CN Intermodal Yard in Brampton, as well as CP Intermodal Yard just on the other side of Highway 50. They generate 7,500 trucks per day, just 3 facilities. So we want to make sure that we are able to provide good transportation accesses to these trucks. Also, as we were talking earlier with Natasha's presentation, that we are comparing ourselves with New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, and other developing countries as well. And we want to be competitive. And we want to make sure that, yes, truck traffic has a negative impact, but if we can minimize that negative impact to certain areas, and if we can work on economic competitiveness, push for the region, because jobs and economy obviously depend on efficient transportation as well as the increased investment.
Yes.
Austin, you have a question.
You mentioned connected and autonomous vehicles. Is the target date to be completed by 2021 or starting 2021? I wasn't quite sure. You said some of the work has already started in that area.
Yes. So right now we are working closely with some of our partners to do a feasibility study. So, for example, if we have to test an actual commercial vehicle, autonomous commercial vehicle on our roads, there are significant work that needs to be done before we actually take the pilot project. So that's why we may have identified for 2021, but we have started working right now. So we will have to identify a corridor. We'll have to find a private sector partner who would be willing to work with us on testing the actual commercial vehicle pilot project. And plus, we'll have to do a significant work on the infrastructure side as well, so that the infrastructure is able to talk to the connected vehicle.
One of the 23 recommendations was research of pilot truck-only lanes. Yeah. How did that work out?
That's an interesting question, because when we identified that as one of our action items in our last strategic plan, we worked very closely with MTO, and we worked with Transportation Association of Canada, because we wanted to make sure that there are any other truck-only lanes in other parts of North America or Australia or Europe. How are they working right now? So in our research, what we found that there were truck-only lanes, but they were there specifically, say, for ports or ports authority or for other specific facility. But we did not find anywhere there was a truck-only lane on any highway or on any arterial road. So with the help of Transportation Association of Canada, we conducted a study, and there was one case study that we included for Highway 427 from 401 to Major Mackenzie. We were looking at a truck-only lane that could be either a separated lane or maybe a lane that could be not physically separated. But then we found that it may be very difficult at this time to implement a truck-only lane. So that's the reason why we just did a research study, but we did not go any further. We did not go any further with a truck-only lane.
My understanding is in North America, anybody suggest that?
Yeah, definitely.
That would happen in Toronto as well.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right. Eileen, I'll get you to come up. We also have talked before at this committee about the labor force issues and some of the planning work that we want to be able to do so that we're ahead of the curve in terms of workforce planning for the airport, given it's such a strong and large generator of employment. One of the first things that we've undertaken, though, is some research to get a good picture of what we have today. And so Eileen's going to talk to you about that first piece of work. I loved it when Sean Smith was here at one of our previous meetings and talked about labor force, and his comment to us was there's two things that the airport runs on, and it's rumors and caffeine. So if we can try and put a little bit more specificity around the labor force and what we have, then it'll give us a lot more of a stronger foundation for actually to do the analysis and plan for the future.
Well, I'll start by saying we're not actually quite where you've said we are. So, so just to manage some expectations. So, there was a three-phase study that was established in cooperation. The definition of which was done in collaboration with the Toronto Airport's Workers' Council. And the first part of the study was really to do a best practices or a benchmarking research piece, environmental scan, and I'm going to talk to you about that today. That work has been concluded largely. That would then be followed by a demographic study of the Toronto Pearson Airport. transport workforce, which is, I think, Lori, more about us getting to understand the wage and the skill profiles and other characteristics, other demographic characteristics of the Pearson workforce. I noticed this was happening when I was sitting back there and listening. People would fade in and out. So let me just put up your hand if you can't hear me. Not the echo, it's just, I think when you turn to look. So, and that work will be, the scope of that work will be established soon, and that will be also done in collaboration with some of our partners and overseen by a steering committee of, comprised of GTAA, labor, and some academics. That composition of that, the specific composition of that steering committee. Then finally, and maybe this will be 2018, 2019, we'll have a great baseline of what is actually happening on the ground here at Toronto Pearson. There's some 49,000 people by our estimate that actually work at Toronto Pearson within the fence and help keep this place running. Who do they look like? There's a bunch of different companies. And how is it their skill set then matches with what the future requirements of the workforce will be, and that'll be the subject of the third phase. KPMG was retained to help us with the benchmarking. And they largely did a desktop research exercise and environmental scan for us, and they provided us some feedback, and I have to say it was I don't want to say we were disappointed, but I think we were surprised that there wasn't more to learn out there. And I think it's really because trying to find an apples to apples comparison is a really challenging thing. And so I think what we're looking forward to doing is actually just getting on with examining ourselves, what's happening on the ground here in much more detail. But anyway, there were some learnings for us, and under the broad categories of wages and benefits, employment continuity, procurement and contract management, and as well a notion of collaboration forums, some of which are more formal and some less formal. So I apologize for the wordiness of this, but essentially the bottom line is the U.S. airport system, there has been a lot of change in the recent years based largely because municipalities have made changes to their labor legislation, and these ultimately extended to the airports. And basically, the message was, if you're an employee at an airport and the airport lives within a municipality, why is it that the wages at those airports are often less than they are in the balance of the municipality? And so there was some effort to go forward and remove that imbalance. And lots of studies were done to indicate the benefits, and of course, resulting in reduced employee turnover, higher employee satisfaction, and greater cooperation ultimately between the parties that help manage the workforce. San Francisco was cited as an example where they actually went a little further than that, and they started a quality standards program, which actually started to speak to their concerns about safety, of course, and also about service quality and service quality delivery. These things go hand in hand, and their results were positive as well. In Copenhagen, this example came up in many stakeholder discussions. They have an agreement with the National Federation of Unions that all airlines, so not an airport industry, but aviation industry, must pay a fair minimum wage to contracted employees, not just to their direct employees. This is a circumstance that can play out not just in the aviation industry, in any industry, the differential in wages between direct and contracted employees. Employment continuity was another issue that was raised in many stakeholder consultations. And again, the U.S. airports and the U.S. airport system provide the most current examples of things that have been done, again, through these municipal ordinances that asked, first of all, for wages to be at a certain level, and then secondly, start to move into employment continuity. So for the example of, let me just see here, renewal of contracts, making sure that a renewal of contract doesn't necessarily translate into a wholesale substitution of employees that are delivering that work. Procurement and contract management or vendor management once you've selected your vendors. There wasn't a lot of discussion about this beyond the examples that were just provided on the previous page in the airport environment specifically. But it is a best practice, as KPMG has identified for us from their own research, to be more strategic and be more thoughtful and be more, think more long-term in your procurement practices. And then as well, have a life cycle approach to your vendor management. YVR was cited as an example to us of an entity that is pursuing best practices that have been put out by the National Safety Council. Again, a lot of these changes were precipitated by a desire to have more or improve safety in some cases, but as well to improve employee satisfaction and equity in wages between either municipal and airport workers or contracted and direct employees. Collaboration forums. There was much discussion with some of the stakeholders we interviewed about the Copenhagen example again, which is a fairly formal structure. We also have forums at the airport where we currently meet, have employee and labor forums that to discuss things, primarily safety. This example was provided to us as a way of showing how that relationship could potentially be broadened to deal with matters more than just the narrow band of safety. But we intend to actually perhaps visit or perhaps invite these guys to come and tell us a bit more about how that works in their system, remembering, of course, that we have a different legislative and regulatory environment always. But it seems it came up in so many of the discussions that it would be worth understanding further. So for us, some of the clear opportunities that came out for us to immediately act upon and for GTA to act upon without waiting for the demographics study results is really review our own vendor and contract procurement practices to make sure that we are, first of all, being strategic about it. But secondly, we aren't inadvertently contributing to some of the concerns that have been raised to us by the stakeholders that have approached us with their concerns. So an example of this might be in reviewing all of the contract language that we have for our service contracts to make sure, well, first of all, to build in enough time upfront in the procurement process to make sure that we will be able to leave sufficient time at the end of the procurement process for a smooth transition. And that includes enough time for the incoming employer or incoming service contractor to interview and offer opportunities to all of the outgoing to the extent that makes sense. In some cases, the outgoing vendor would actually like to have their employees remain with them and redeploy them. But in cases where that isn't necessarily going to take place, make sure that there is sufficient time for such transitions to happen. The other thing we're looking at is our contract language to make sure that there are no opportunities for wages to slip backwards for work that is substantially the same. So the work is clearly the same as what the outgoing contractor's work was doing, and there were no changes in service levels, or actual work that needed to be done. We don't really see a reason for those wages to have to actually recede or regress. We're going to share the results of some of these findings with the Toronto Airports Workers Council very shortly and with other partners, including the airlines and some of our other service contractors, third parties on airport. And then, of course, we're going to proceed with the reference demographic profile because that will give us a lot more information about what's happening here at Toronto Pearson, and we hope to have that underway in the first quarter of next year. it, and I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you, Eileen. Any questions of Eileen? There's a lot here on the slides, which is, makes it a nice takeaway for us all to pour over a little bit more closely, so thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I noticed the City of Toronto's fair wage policy. I didn't know that.
Yes. Yeah. City of Mississauga.
How long has that been in place?
I don't think it's been in place that long. I think a couple of years.
That first came, I know there was, it came back to council, I think, 6 months ago, to make some amendments to it and reaffirm its commitment to that.
Yep.
Specifically, I can't speak to it, but.
And there are other, like City of Mississauga, I don't know what the term is. But they have a... Yes, yeah, yeah. But these things tend to always have some kind of instigator problem child, but that's the way in which progress gets made, right? I think the City of Mississauga has a strategic procurement policy that looks to achieve some social objectives as well, going a little bit more broadly, and something that perhaps we can think about. A fair wage, strategic procurement policy to sort of identify the objectives. Again, back to the strategic procurement approaches. So if there are things that Toronto Pearson would like to achieve as part of its broader mandate, how do we incorporate that into some of our costs?
Well, there's no, Stephen?
Yeah, just a... I do sympathize and actually can, there isn't too much surprise here. There isn't too much that we didn't already know. The fact that we tried to emphasize that the Danish model is emphasized because that is the cream of the crop.
Yeah, yeah.
Model that would be, returned to. My question is, and if you can't answer it here, that's fine. It's the next two phases that I think are going to be more.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Is KPMG being considered to do these next two phases? Was that tender for all three phases?
No, it wasn't. It was just for the benchmarking research. So we will recruit for a separate consultant to help us with the demographic work. Yeah.
There's no more all questions, right. Eileen. We will welcome you back in 2018 with results of the next phase.
That'll be the fun stuff.
All right, so we're doing okay for time, I think. Let's get to my notes. That is the end of our regular agenda. I did miss one thing that I just want to go backwards a little bit. So I just wanted to report back on some of the items from the previous minutes that we did follow up on. So we had talked about a best practices report that has been done for us in terms of noise management, and that was presented, and it has been circulated to the committee following the meeting. We did have the committee presentation we just had, and there was also a question that came up back in November 20th. Sorry, that was when we circled. I'm talking about what meeting came up on, Siobhan. There was a question from cybersecurity, and I think, Janet, it was your question. And so that was emailed to committee members on the 23rd of this month. So we have followed up on the action items. Just wanted to make sure I covered that off. All right, so that is the end of the agenda items. And what we always want to make sure we leave time to do is to go around the table and make sure that we have updates from all members on any issues that they would like to bring to our attention. I don't know if Savik has had to leave the phone, but he has emailed me his update, so I can deliver that if he's on a GO train. So, Jan, I'll start on my left today.
Wow. The MBOT, the Federal Finance Minister, I think I saw yesterday Bill Morneau, our federal finance minister, announced to the Canadian Chamber of Commerce and the Institute of Corporate Directors this week that they're working on a further plan to reduce costs for Canadian businesses because there's a lot of slack from a lot of companies and SMEs. So Canadian businesses could continue to be
He realizes they need to continue to compete globally, and they need to lower the most recent reduction from 10.5 to 9%, but the companies are asking for a further reduction. Also, provincial finance minister Charles Souza, he provided his annual economic update for MBOT last Friday on the 24th, and Charles stated that one-third of all jobs in Ontario and Canada are now SMEs. Private companies or SMEs that are growing. Charles stated also, and $1.9 billion support has been provided to businesses in Ontario, and $500 million of grants as part of that to SMEs to upgrade their facilities, offices, technology to complete globally. Our Ontario currently has a 2.8% GDP growth in Ontario, and over 300,000 more new jobs will be created Ontario by 2020. The GDP growth rate in other countries, however, is between 5 to 7%. So Canada has a lot to do to keep up and remain competitive. So thus important to the airport, exports and imports coming out of our airport. Toronto and the GTA is number 2 in IT next to California's Silicon Valley now. Toronto is currently number 2 in fintech, the financial sector, just beside New York City. Okay. And as of January 1st, the provincial government will have tax cuts to SMEs, which is great, and reducing their taxes from 4.5% to 3.5%. So it'll be the lowest tax rate for SMEs in the province in 30 years, which that will be good for the booming economy and for private companies. There was a push from this from a lot of SMEs and private companies in a recent survey that was done as well. The city of Mississauga, this is great, has announced a new bus service that you're probably aware of from the city of Mississauga city center to the Toronto Pearson Airport effective September 1st, 2018. Yay! And it's the city of Mississauga, it's in their budget. Yay! Which was passed last week. Okay? They only did a marginal increase for the corporations of 1.1, but the stormwater charge was 6.5%. And also for the people and tourism, MBOT and the City of Mississauga have been working closely together in exploring a hotel tax. They have spoke with the Deputy Minister of Tourism, who confirmed the regulation on the hotel tax should be released by the end of October 2017, and the public stakeholder meeting is being held in the hotel industry in Mississauga, it's next week, and they're having shareholders or people that are connected with the tourism industry attend that meeting. And they've also MBOT, City of Mississauga has hired a consultant to prepare a report on creating a Mississauga Tourism Bureau that would be operated by the associations, and the goal is to improve tourism in Mississauga. Okay. And both the region and Mississauga appeal, or the region appeal.
Their budgets were good.
And CETA, an export information session, was held at MBOT at the corporate center and was well attended. So there's obviously lots of companies that want to continue to export and new companies exporting the airport. So
that's great. Thanks, Jen. On the hotel tax, the regulations were released last week. So yeah. I did see that. And just, I know it was...
Just last night, were they?
Yeah.
So they were late doing it.
Yes, they were a little bit. But and just, there was a little bit of confusion, so I just want to clarify it for the minutes, that the study on a Mississauga Tourism Bureau is actually being done by MBOT. Mm. And I know that Councillor Sato, who chairs the Mississauga Tourism Committee, was concerned there was some confusion. It looked like it was a city report. Study, but it actually is the Board of Trade that is doing that. Okay. I'm a director on the Board of Trade, so that's how I know that. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Star, you're next.
Okay. Things continue to go in the right direction for the city of Brampton. I'm sure everybody here knows that this year we will be announcing the location of new university campus in Brampton. The stakeholders in Brampton, including Brampton Board of Trade, are overwhelmingly in support
of locating the campus in downtown to revitalize the downtown core. The initial economic studies done by the city staff indicate that the preliminary stages of construction, the project will add something to the tune of $668 million, I believe, to our economy. And over the long run, as we go into the operational phase, it'll continue to add about $300 million plus on an annualized basis. That is also actually working out really well in conjunction with the fact this, that Brampton Board of Trade and the city has actively participated in discussions around the super advanced manufacturing cluster, again, between Toronto and Kitchener-Waterloo. We've leveraged both those things in our discussions with international stakeholders. I had a chance to visit Turkey 2 weeks ago to attend the National Manufacturer Exporter Expo. Once in a year, the 12 large exporting unions come together in Istanbul to talk about the fascinating stuff that's going on in the domestic manufacturing and exporting market. And at the same time, you know, it's an opportunity for this for the policymakers to address their future vision in terms of where things need to be going. So we got to pitch Brampton in partnership with a colleague of mine from Mississauga Board of Trade, Imran Hassan, who chairs the Government Relations Committee, I believe. Yeah, but it chairs the Government Relations Committee. So a net result of that interaction is that we will be hosting a delegation of some 22 businesses, primarily concentrating on advanced manufacturing, both food processing as well as automotive and anybody in the market for a luxury yacht, come talk to us. come talk to us next week. So we'll be hosting them on December 6th at our annual International Trade Committee holiday reception. Now, that event was started 4 years ago primarily to give an opportunity to our local manufacturers and exporters to meet international businesses as well as foreign diplomats that are based out of Toronto. So given that everybody's hot and bothered these days with the NAFTA negotiations, we opted to have the U.S. Council General as our keynote speaker. He'll be there along with the Council Generals of Turkey, UAE. I believe there will be representation from the Indian Consulate as well as from the Pakistani Consulate. So it should be an interesting evening. We'll have a fairly reasonable representation from the large employer base in Brampton. And I think I had sent an invite to GTA, Laurie, but I could be remiss on that, so I'll make sure, and I'll go back and double-check, make sure that it was sent out. CN has graciously opted to host the event at their intermodal. This is their third year doing it. So all in all, what I can tell you is that the interactions will only result in more traffic flow through GTAA, more goods moving through GTAA, and therefore everything that we have discussed today needs to be looked upon very carefully.
Thank you. The work of the All Workers Council is shifting a little bit. We were consumed this summer with, you know, the pretty nasty labor dispute that I commented on last time between Teamsters 419 and Swissport. We're shifting now. Our major campaign that we will be launching is an anti-privatization campaign. The anti-privatization, of course, of Pearson. And the sell-off of Pearson through a further privatization of its ownership model is something that we're resisting. And we are keeping an eye on things. It's pretty clear what direction things are going on. I mean, these are dots that need to be connected. But just over the last couple of weeks, there have been two major appointments to the Canadian Infrastructure Bank. James Cherry, who is the CEO of Aéroport Montréal, who is a pro-privatization person. Poonam Puri was also nominated. She did 3 terms or 9 years on the GTAA, and been named to the Canadian Infrastructure Bank. So they're seeing those two sectors that the CIB is interested in is airports and energy. Those are the folks that are being appointed so we can know what direction that they're going on. There's other things that we track as well. Ron Mock, who's the director of the OT, Ontario Teachers Pension Plan, OTPP, making public statements on the news about how the Canadian public needs to be educated on why airports need to be privatized. So this is all being orchestrated at the national level that that's coming down to where being trying to be proactive. Now, just so you know that I'm not crazy and the labor paranoid guy, there was also an interesting motion passed the City of Mississauga Council, and I'll read an excerpt from it where they say, whereas the international experience of airport privatization has often resulted in higher fees and reduced services for travelers and airlines as a result of the efforts to maximize return on investment. And that was a motion that called for a broader consultation around this issue, given the history of airport privatization globally. And that was a motion was presented and seconded by Chris Von Sanka and Carolyn Parrish. So I imagine that motion did come across the desk. There was some discussion among GTA administration. But there are a lot of stakeholders other than labor that are opposing the privatization of this strategic asset. And we will be, it's an existential crisis for us. We're taking it quite seriously. And we are trying to bring on to make the privatization of Pearson, or the anti-privatization of Pearson campaign, a focal point for not only OFL, but the Canadian Labour Congress as well. So that's what we're working on. So just to keep you advised.
So I will bring a quick update from the City of Toronto. I do have a community meeting at 6, so I will have to depart right after this. Yeah. So my ward's just across the street, so I'm not too far. But so just to bring everyone up to date with the City of Toronto, one of the main things on our agenda in the next couple months, which you may have heard in the news recently, is the stage gate process for Smart Track and our transit expansions in the City of Toronto. Smart Track project update and next steps did hit executive committee yesterday, and they were ratified to move to council. At this current stage, the transportation network is looking to be approved for the design of the six stations on the regional express rail on the GO tracks, and then the extension of the Eglinton West LRT going across. Studies are, and that is a 10 station expansion, and then studies are continuing to look at the Renforth Gateway. And I know through Metrolinks, no studies are continuing, and pretty much this stage gate is structured in which City Council will be given its commitment to work with Metrolinx to continue the shared vision. And then, of course, the shared vision of the regional transit Waterloo corridor between Toronto and Waterloo. So that will become the City Council. The other thing that is quite exciting is the York Spadina subway extension opening in Vaughan, which will be happening, I believe, on December 17th. That will be a 7-stop extension. I know that was approved by council before I was born, so I think transit planning is, you know, I think we need to pick that up a bit. But I was talking to one of my colleagues, and she said, and that was 27 years ago, and I was like, unbelievable. But good news, that will be opening, scheduled to open on December 17th. A couple other updates I do have, specific to the airport area, specifically north of Etobicoke. Plans continue on one of North America's largest developments is the Woodbine Entertainment Complex with Great Canadian, which will be a huge economic investment in not only into the northwest sector in Toronto, but the area as a whole. So that continues, looking to be coming to council in Q1 2018. I also forgot to mention, just to go back to Smart Track, this will be coming back to City Council in Q2 2018 for the next step, just to add to that. And then lastly, the 427 expansion, widening, which did happen this past year. Myself and a couple other councillors in the city have met with our transportation department, who have met with the Ministry of Transportation, I know, which is looking at continuing the widening of the 427 up to Major Mackenzie. So that's the update from the City of Toronto. If anyone has any questions, please feel free to reach out to our office, and I'm happy to go into anything in a little more detail.
Great, thank you. And I know you need to run, but we there's a number of people around this table who are very interested in better transit to the Western GTA, so we're really excited to see the Eglinton Crosstown move to the next sort of stage.
We're moving. Hopefully it won't be 27 years. There is, I should say that there is still some debate on the grade separation, and but however those talks will continue.
Well, thank you, Councillor. Great to have you here. Jonathan, from the region.
Excuse me. Thank you. Just two updates. I will pile on the December 17th opening of the subway in Vaughan. So we're excited about that in New York region, and we invite you all to attend. The other thing I want to mention is that the last time I was here, I mentioned our Broadband and Innovation Summit, which was scheduled to take place on October 27th. It did happen. We had 106 organizations represented. We have had almost 200 people attend. And a really well appreciated event, which we focused on infrastructure, but fiber infrastructure, not what you typically see or where you drive on. This is the fiber optic infrastructure that enables the ICT industry, not just here in the GTA, but worldwide. So that was well attended, and we had some really good results on that. And we're getting started now on just gathering the data to look at planning for next year.
So I have a couple of quick updates. Later on, I guess, not end of the month, next month, we're starting a local food initiative, which looks at the whole, all of Durham region. So that involves addressing gaps in the agri-food assets, but also identifying the opportunities to strengthen the distribution networks, which will, again, look at the movement of goods within the region and outside of it. So that's going to be starting soon, and that's very exciting for us to do. Another strategy that we've been started recently is the broadband strategy. So the first phase of it just concluded. So that's just the preliminary findings of reports. And then second phase will continue once we hit 2018. So that should be finalized by mid-year. I was given date of June. July 2018, so hopefully we'll know more about that. And we're launching a new corporate site in less than 2 weeks, which has been a very exciting project for us. So I'll be glad once that's done. It's been a lot of work.
Yeah. What is the new site?
It's our new corporate website.
A website, sorry. Yeah. I thought you were moving?
No, not a new building.
It's a website.
Yeah,
your virtual location.
It hasn't been redone in quite some time, so it was quite an extensive process that involved a lot of community consultation, and the feedback from the residents has been incorporated into it. So it's a very different look and feel than what we've had previously.
Those are big undertakings, so congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
How was Halton?
Busy. A lot of development. Just on the development front, last year in 2016 was a record year in terms of building permit value, and we've already exceeded that as of the halfway point in 2017. So a lot of distribution centers being built along the 401 corridor between Halton Hills and Milton. So that continues to be where distribution is happening. And so we're very keen on very enthused by the work that Peel Region is doing. Some great work next door to us, as we need to be working side by side with them. Just thinking about Milton as well, like Brampton, we're I guess waiting for an official announcement from the province. It's supposed to happen this fall, on the days of the fall they're winnowing, with respect to the new post-secondary campus in Milton, Laurier University, Wilfrid Laurier University, and Conestoga College are our partners. And they have a campus site which is on Tremaine Road, just south of the 401, with the beautiful Niagara Escarpment in the background just to the west. And that's just a few meters away from the Pan Am Mattamy National Cycling Center. So if you've never seen that before, tourism plug. Caroline's in the room. I decided to throw that in there. It's one of only two facilities in North America that are this world class. And in fact, coming up, starting this Friday, is an international track cycling, which is huge in Europe. There's going to be probably 30 million people watching this. Not many in North America, but around the world. Sorry, that's a bit on the miscellaneous side, but kind of fun. Our budget is going to committee and council in the next week. We're coming in with a 1.9% increase on the property tax side, really driven a lot by growth in our region. So the EMS paramedic group is really finding our call volumes are at what they projected would be happening in 2023 are now happening. I think I noticed as well, Lurie, that there's a lot of people from Halton complaining to the GTAA in Toronto Pearson as well. So our call volumes seem to be off the charts, and I'm not exactly sure to how to explain all of that. On the rate side, our water rates are about the 3.5% rates, so it's manageable. It's a little lower than when we had previously forecast. And that's really driven by state of good repair, the reinvestments going back into the water and wastewater system. What else do we have here? I think that's probably it. I don't want to unduly delay us. I think that's the front end for Halton right now.
So John's referencing the fact that in your update on the noise complaints, you can see in Halton there's this massive number of complaints.
I was going to ask whether that was a typo or not. Was there an extra zero in there? That was shocking.
So year to date, we have more than 49,000 complaints from one person.
One person.
How many complaints?
49,000.
From one person?
From one person.
It wasn't me. I'm not sure who that.
He's an individual that we talk to all the time,
okay.
And he has concerns, and we're addressing
all right.
That. But he also is quite prolific in terms of his.
That is prolific.
So it throws your data off a little bit.
Okay, thank you for the explanation, because I think I was a little concerned. I'm going to go offline with that, but anyway, thanks, Lori.
Shane.
I wanted to follow up on what I discussed last meeting about the development of a coordinated strategy and vision for transit with the center in the airport area. I don't want to do anything that rocks the boat or does anything inappropriate for this committee, but I have wondered if there is any utility in this committee ratifying a motion for a coordinated transit strategy, which I think might be appropriate. I don't mind preparing it and draft to circulate. We can discuss it. I don't think it needs to be rushed, but a lot of it deals with just the need for planning, capital allocation. Sorry, I can't read very well with the light, the way it is, but
can't get them on.
With the acquisition and preservation of lands for transit, because a coordinated strategy, like if you lose the lands, it's impossible. And that's why I've mentioned before with the 407 transitway, if 1 inch of that's given up, there will never be a connection between Pearson and whenever Pickering Airport does get created. You have to keep that, and that's what I do for a living. I work for the owners, but that's besides the point. And just a coordination of all levels of government. And if you look at it, we're situated where some of the three largest cities in Ontario meet. Three largest, like Region of York, Region of Peel, City of Toronto, we're on right around there. And getting a coordinated strategy that involves the federal government, the provincial government, the regions, Metrolinx, the TTC. So to perhaps even investigate a recommendation for a committee that the airport can not control, but coordinate so that there's planning and coordination that the airport has a degree of control over. And perhaps I could speak to Lori at another time just to get her direction on the right way to do it, because I don't want to upset the apple cart. But at the same time, I do think everyone in this room would benefit from this. And it is in the interest of all of the levels of government, all of the businesses in the area, and for the airport in general, because it really does increase the value of the asset if you look at it that way too. So I don't know what the next step is, but I'd be prepared to try to draft up one page that everyone can consider and perhaps make a recommendation to the GTA board or whatever else you think might be the appropriate means for that.
Thanks, Shane.
Unless I'm starting trouble, in which case tell me and I won't. So
you're not starting trouble. It's a terrific suggestion, and we did talk about it at the end of the last meeting. One of the challenges, if I could, around transit at Pearson is just a function of the fact that you've got a federal piece of property. We're involved in aviation. You have municipal and provincial authorities that are charged with transit and transportation planning. We straddle, as you say, a number of municipalities, you know, with Brampton and Mississauga and Peel and Toronto. You know, we're no longer sitting sort of at the western edge of Toronto. We're smack dab in this really large city region, so it's broader than just, you know, the GTA. And so we've kind of looked and seen examples. Like, you know, people ask first, so why do you have this situation you find yourself today where you've got all these transit lines getting close but not connecting to the airport? And I think it's a function of those things. I think it's a bit of a function of, for many years, there hasn't been enough money to do network planning. It's been enough money to do little bits and pieces. And I think now with three levels of government aligning on, you know, the need to invest in transit, we have an opportunity to do a bit more big thinking. Other example that we were looking to, because we've been sort of ourselves, how do we advance this? We looked at what Vancouver did with the Canada Line. They had some similar challenges in that they had, you know, different municipal authorities involved. And in their case, the airport authority did take the lead role to be a bit of a catalyst to bring together all of the, you know, planners from the different municipalities, provincial government, federal government, to try and advance the studies to come, you know, make some choices about priorities and ultimately investments. So we're kind of taking a page off of that, and we've started to talk with the province and the federal government and local municipalities in Toronto and Brampton about, can we create some kind of a planning coordination forum table governance structure, if you will. And so we're on the same page as you are. I think if we can have this group talk that through a bit more and pass the resolution and support, I think that would be terrific, because it's a challenge for to get done, and in part because it's a big meaty undertaking given the number of players involved, given the amount of money, given that everyone's got different priorities.
Also, you can't just form a committee and it happens. You know, like, that doesn't happen easily.
Yeah, you know, we can invite people, but they may not show up.
Yeah, but it's also, when you're dealing with that many levels of government, it's not like you just snap your fingers.
No. We had one meeting that involved three levels of government in late October, and I think it took 3 or 4 months to schedule, just given people's time. And so you do need to get something locked in with membership and governance and rules and not make it so big and clumsy that nothing gets done. So you've got to think it through a little bit more. So we are doing that. So we don't meet again until January or February. And it's one of the things we have to talk about is the meeting schedule for the next year. So maybe can we talk it offline and circulate something to the rest of the committee in terms of an idea?
Like, this is a 30-year process. So.
But no, you're not off base at all. It's a great suggestion.
Well, it'll be innovative, but
good governance,
coordination, and synergy, and planning in an innovative way. So,
okay. So, last but not least, the Toronto Board of Trade. Natasha has, of course, already given us a great overview of the Movement of Goods report, and certainly a lot of work has been going into that over recent months and that continues for the fourth and final piece of that report. In addition, so earlier this week, Natasha mentioned this, the vision for a regional transit authority, the Superlinks, was issued. So do take a look at that on the Toronto Board of Trade website. And then today, and this is added to my reading list, the Board of Trade also released their energy policy playbook, which is part of their agenda for growth. So that was released today. Events, a very large event, the third annual transportation summit hosted by the Toronto Board of Trade took place last week. There were over 300 attendees, a really excellent day and very interesting discussions. I did want to just very briefly mention to all of you, based on the discussions had earlier and some of the questions you posed, similar issues came up, specifically the idea of collaboration between government authorities and the private sector, and certainly not having ideas be private sector centric or public sector centric. And that idea of partnership was a recurring theme throughout the day, as was the issue of, you know, the importance of looking at the movement of goods, looking at the movement of people, but understanding that the two really cannot be separated, and that a sustainable strategy for the movement of people is important to enable the movement of goods, and a smarter strategy for the movement of goods is important to enable the continued movement of people. And then finally on rail, that also came up. CN Rail were represented at the conference, and this idea of requiring a little bit more from a broader range of stakeholders for investment in rail infrastructure was also something that was mentioned. So I wanted to let you know about that. And then tomorrow morning, the Toronto Board of Trade will be hosting Minister Champagne. He'll be giving a keynote address focused primarily on Canada's strategy moving forward for trading relations with China, which I'm sure will be of interest for those with an interest in international trade.
All right, to our technical. Caroline, anything from tourism?
For us, I don't know what the updates are, how long it's been since Matthew was able to give everyone an update, but we have a strategic framework that we're working through within our ministry, and our goal is to global tourism growth, which is one of the largest and fastest growing industries globally. So that's really our collective goal. So obviously that impacts air travel, and that's an important piece for us. So within that, looking at policies to improve access, supporting the airport, supporting access into this port is important for us. And as we look at new markets, you just brought up China. You know, we're over in China trying to open that up. We're looking at other large populations like India, like Brazil, as well as our traditional markets in Europe and Asia Pacific. So all those things are extremely important for us, and there are things that our policy division are working on all the time. Looking at this as a major gateway as well as a hub for transportation is also important for us, getting relevant to the presentation. The goods of people, movement of people and goods is important for us because we bring a very different type of transportation pattern with the people who come in from a tourism perspective. So making sure that is thought of within not just the commuter and resident, but also, you know, the impact of having tourists come in. And obviously that's front of mind for this group. And then again, relevant to the presentation, we also have a large piece within our strategic framework that's looking at workforce. So looking at tourism as a career and the depth and breadth of what that actually means. So in this environment, it could be anything from somebody working on the tarmac right up to flying the planes and anything in between there. So we're trying to figure that out, as well as labor shortages. We know in the airline industry is really looking forward into the whole pilot and aviation piece and panicking a little bit about what they're going to do. They're already have shortages now. What are they going to do long term? So part of our workforce piece is looking at those types of labor shortages, not just obviously in this industry, but across the industry as a whole. Quite a few relevant things got brought up here, like the hotel tax. And obviously that's a big one with that legislation coming through. Bill 148 with getting back to labor shortages, working on that from a policy piece as well. Obviously minimum wages, important one, or the most impactful one for us, for our small to medium enterprises. So yeah, lots of stuff going on, but it's always interesting.
Paul from MTO? No, good. Sarah, anything from Tourism Toronto?
I just wanted to report on some numbers in case folks weren't aware of the projections for 2017, but some great news coming from international overnight visitors, well, generally overnight visitors. We're looking at 15.6 million overnight visitors, which is a record. It's the first time we've gone over 15 million, so yay us. Projected spend, $8.8 billion in visitor spend in Toronto for 2017, another win. And 5.1 million for international. So that's the first time we've passed that $5 million mark. And just something to note, April, May saw a 21% increase in visitors, which is great news. And outpaces the, increase rate for visitors across Canada, which is, I think, sitting at 14%. And we're attributing a lot of that to the shift in visa regulations in Mexico. So our Mexico numbers have skyrocketed. Seeing a lot of growth there. And also from India and Korea are quickly outpacing
that. 21% increase, is that on international or overall?
That's overall.
Overall, okay.
That's overall. So we'll announce the summer numbers. I know it seems crazy. Here we are looking at snow probably, and we're announcing our summer numbers. But thanks, Stats Canada. So we've got our summer numbers coming out soon, and then we'll have our final hard numbers will come out likely in February for 2017. Those are our projections.
Ludwig,
Nothing from us from transport.
Natasha, anything further?
No, I'm good. Thank you very much.
All right, Massimo, are you still with us?
Yes, I am. And I guess my first comment is that I will be with you in person next time because I've, unfortunately, because of the very poor connection, I've only caught about 25% of what was said. You will see me next time. And I look forward to that. Really quickly, we are, working with our colleagues, with the, Canadian Airport Council on, a further push on the facilitation side on the, to try to secure additional funding, for CATSA, and that is, as a transition measure as we move or as the government, probably moves, the agency to, some different, governance structure business model. And as I indicated earlier, we're somewhat hopeful, that, this may actually be successful. If only because of the emphasis that Minister Garneau and the government has placed on the traveler. And so we intend to highlight the disconnect between the rhetoric and action with respect to that issue. Of some interest to folks will be that we are now looking at hosting and holding a symposium on aviation that will focus on passengers, on travelers, and the traveler experience sometime in the spring. And again, the idea is to explain exactly the complexity and the complex web of rules, of systems, of policies that go into moving passengers safely and efficiently. And that, we believe, is an important part of the education and advocacy work that needs to be done in order to get on the same page in a positive way with the Government of Canada over the next few months, and we will keep you informed on that. With respect to the sort of for-profit privatization, if I can use that term, because it was mentioned earlier, most of you know that our organization has not been in favor of that. under the current system and with the current level of let's say transparency that around this issue from the Government of Canada, we have pushed for additional information around this issue. We have made and will make more substantive representations to the Government of Canada with respect to the matter of economic regulation of a for-profit entity, if we are to go down that route. And I believe there was reference to a resolution that was adopted, and I believe it is a model resolution that we shared with mayors and councils a couple of months ago, inviting mayors and councils across the country to consider adopting a resolution expressing concerns with for-profit privatization and pushing the government to be more transparent and engage in this area, as well as to urging the Federation of Canadian Municipalities to debate this issue as well. So in a nutshell, that is my report, and I look forward to actually meeting you next time that this group meets.
Great. Thank you very much, Massimo.
Sure.
Badar has a question for you, Massimo.
Massimo, it's Badar from Brampton Board of Trade. So the regional chambers obviously spent a lot of time encouraging and inclusive representation of our business community. From a labor perspective, somebody brought to our attention at Brampton Board of Trade that Air Canada has recently told their air crew of Pakistani origins that they're no longer allowed to serve the Canada to India direct flights. It's been confirmed independently by local Indian community members in Brampton. Can a foreign government make a Canadian airline do something like that?
That's a good question. I do know that our carriers have to abide by the rules and the laws of the countries that they serve. Now that is a little bit broad. Would you mind sending me a quick email on that, and then
Absolutely.
I will try to get back to you.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay.
I think Savik has fallen off. Savik from Seneca College. He just wanted everyone to know that he's very pleased to be back at work, and they have 350 students in the aviation program at Seneca, and they're all doing really well and excited about the term. I have three super, super quick updates. One, we've talked to you before about the airport's master plan, so that looks 2017 out to 2037. It's the next 20-year plan. So that will be in draft and submitted to Transport Canada end of this week, and so it'll also be available online. We also are doing some work in terms of advocacy for USCBP resources in Washington coming up December 6th, 7th, and 8th. So we're doing that with some of our colleagues with Air Canada and WestJet, Porter, Billy Bishops, others from the industry, and so we've got a round table we're putting together just to support the value of preclearance in Canada, particularly in Toronto and Billy Bishop, to serve U.S. markets. And then just to echo comments around facilitation and how important that is. As we keep growing, that's part of the challenge. So we're always looking for governments to support CATSA, CBP, and the challenges that we face in terms of lineups often are because the government agencies just haven't been able to keep up. So that's something that we work with our airline partners and Canadian. So those are my quick updates. We are longer than normal, so my apologies for that. But unless – oh, Ingrid, are we going to do a survey on dates for next year?
Yeah.
So one of the things that we've had a challenge over the years, and I don't know if this is going to create a problem, but Brampton has typically not been able to come in terms of their elected officials because they always have their meetings on Wednesday. And when we put out our survey every year – it always lands as Wednesday's the best day. So what we're going to do is we're going to put the survey out, and we're not going to include Wednesday, and we're going to see where we land, just because it feels really bad. I feel really badly that we just never are on a day when Brampton councillors can join. So we will we'll circulate that and get our dates set for next year. So that isn't set at this point. We've held a couple pending that outcome. Other than that, I think a motion to adjourn. Bedar, second. Jane is nodding. All right. Anyone opposed? That's carried. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.